Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. My name is Jenna Wolf. His name is Chris Carter. He's in the Hall of Fame. That is Nick Wright. He will be in the Hall of Fame one day. We'll figure out why later.
Oh, I'm in the Hall. Maybe not the Pro Football Hall, but there's, yeah, absolutely. No doubt about it.
Breaking news.
You didn't know?
No, give us a hall. Give us a hall you're in.
WAER at Syracuse University?
Yeah.
Pending induction. I'm assuming I'm going to be first ballot once I'm eligible. That's what I'm assuming. This all got thrown off because Jenna didn't say Hall of Famer Chris Carter.
No,
Chris Carter's in the Hall of Fame, and now we're here.
You are in the Hall. We will be one day.
Lena, Jenna.
Lena, what's happening?
We're all good?
Can we start over?
Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. Oh, that is very sweet. Thank you for your little social studies love notes. You will never believe what Jared Goff had to say about Patrick Mahomes. The king returns to Cleveland, but we got to start this three-hour show in Dallas, where the Cowboys are setting the table for a Thanksgiving feast. Their guests, Washington. All right, let's go over some of the things Dallas is thankful for this holiday season. Back-to-back road wins, Ezekiel Elliott, a pretty good defense, and a 5-5 record in a very shaky division. In fact, they can pull even with Washington for the NFC East lead with a win tomorrow. Here's Dak Prescott on the pivotal division matchup.
Our backs are against the wall. Regardless, we're not worried about what we've done up to this point. It's about just moving forward, and I think that's allowed us to get on this two-game winning streak and get the record back to 500. Is because we know our backs are against the walls. Every game matters. Every game is a must-win. Nothing changes this week.
All right, CC. It's hard to believe we're saying this because we had this team all but dead a couple weeks ago. But are the Dallas Cowboys the team to beat in the NFC East?
Well, if you look at the circumstances that the Giants, Washington, world champion Philadelphia, if you look at every one of their individual situations, you've been like, I would much rather have Dallas. They're a lot healthier. How they match up with the other teams, they match up better. And typically you'd be like, I'm going to take the best quarterback. Now, Carson Wentz is the best quarterback. That wouldn't be a debate. That wouldn't be a long conversation. But the rest of the football team, you can see that Dallas and their ability to be able to run the ball and dominate. And it's very important in November, how healthy are you? Mm-hmm. I mean, you can only play, you can say next guy up, but you know every time you go, the talent level, every time that next guy go up, the talent level goes down. And there's reason why that player was not playing.
Sure.
And they have limitations, and typically they get exploited. I just believe that Dallas and their front seven, that being offensively and defensively, based on Washington and what they faced in the last couple weeks as far as wholesale injuries across that offensive line, like, I believe that matchup is just in their quarterback. So I just don't believe they'll be able to overcome that. Dallas has the situation that I believe that as the season goes on, they are going to get better, and the other teams, definitely, we haven't seen that.
Right now, the team that's playing the second-best football in the NFC East is the New York Giants. The Giants, they've won a couple games lately. They are coming off arguably the best game of the year. Like, Giants playing their second-best football. Dallas is playing the best. For Washington, it's been an injury issue. We talked about how the injuries might have ruined them, and that was before they lost their starting quarterback to a traumatic lower leg injury. I will warn the Cowboys of this. Once upon a time, 4 years ago on national television, Colt McCoy beat you. Colt McCoy beat you in a year that you were actually pretty good. And Colt McCoy, since that season, hasn't started a game in this league. That was in 2014. And so, like,
but
this
you mentioned that because Colt McCoy will be starting for Washington in place of Alex Smith.
Thank you for the clarification. Absolutely. But this is all about the division. See, there are things the Cowboys do well, and we can emphasize those things. But what's also true is, in any other division in football, they would not be in the discussion for the best team. In any other division in the NFC, they would not be in the discussion for the second best team. Like, this is about who they have to go up against, who they have to catch, which is why the game this Thursday is so incredibly critical. You mentioned it. Yes, with a win, they're tied for first. With a loss, they're de facto three back with five to play. So with a win, they feel great. With a loss, they're two back in the loss column, and they will have been swept by Washington. So this is the biggest game of the year in the division, and Washington's got to deal with a backup quarterback.
But you got to look at this team, and you say they struggled out of the gate. They struggled early on in the season. If there was any point in the season for them to be hitting their stride, it's right now, where Ezekiel Elliott is getting the touches you want him to get, where Dak Prescott has somehow found a way to make that offense work, where the defense is playing well, and now they just have to get Amari Cooper back into the fold. It seems like everything's clicking for this team.
All those things are accurate. At least they have an identity. We know now when they start, especially based on these last two road wins, which we have to say, they are very impressive. They did all the things that in the previous road losses that they weren't doing. So now, when they start the game, we know they have a sense of identity, what they're going to do, how they're going to get the ball to Zeke. The mystery to it is, and I'm going to say, I'm just going to temper my disappointment, how good is Amari Cooper going to be in the last six games? All right? We've given him a couple games. Mm-hmm. We haven't necessarily said anything. We know the transition is very, very tough. But when you trade for a veteran wide receiver and you trade a first-round pick, you are expecting him, after a month in your building, to have a serious impact. Now, what we've seen, and Nick and I watching a couple games together, we've seen they're getting better coverages, so which in turn, it has helped Dak manage the box. It has helped Zeke out as far as get him to that second level. But at some point, Amari Cooper has got to look like a guy who's made the Pro Bowl twice.
Right. You don't trade a first-round pick for a guy because he's going to shift coverage and make things easier for other guys. That's an added benefit to what you trade a first-round pick for, which is for a guy who can have 75-plus yards, a touchdown every other game or so, and be a Pro Bowl-caliber wide
but
receiver.
But, Nick, is that on Amari Cooper? Is that on Dak Prescott? Or is that on this offense trying to work him in?
Right now, I would say we have to put it on all parties. Because we can't say, it's not as if Dak was playing great before Amari got there, and it's not as if Amari was playing great before he went over to Dallas. Both Amari had been struggling to have big games. Dak hadn't thrown for over 275 yards all season. So both parties are consistent on that. What has changed for Dallas since they added Amari Cooper is Zeke's gotten the ball more. Zeke's been more effective. And you have seen things open up for Allen Hurns, Cole Beasley, more so than they had early in the year. So it has been it has been a good pickup when you don't consider what they gave up. In order for it to be worth what they gave up, then you need to see what Chris is talking about. You need to see legitimate in-game impact from the play.
In a game like this where you know you're going to have guys like Josh Norman, a lot of one-on-one battles, because you can believe that the tape that the Cowboys have sent out there, teams are going to start to realize we can't stop that running game with seven people in the box. We have to go back to putting eight people in the box. Amari Cooper, that's the time that he should show up. Thanksgiving, that's why you trade for a guy like that. One-on-one, divisional matchups. So I'm looking forward to seeing, I'm expecting them to be able to grow his productivity coming down the stretch.
And one underrated thing about these three Thanksgiving games, the Cowboys obviously playing one of them, an underrated thing about Thursday games all year. Home field advantage in the NFL might not mean as much as it did in years past, but on Thursdays it does. Home teams on Thursdays this year are 9-2. The only home teams to lose are the Giants and the Cardinals, two of the worst teams in the league. So if you're a decent team, being at home on Thursday where you don't have to travel, where the other team really has like the day of recovery, one day to install a game plan, the next day they're traveling, that has been an enormous advantage for the home team. The Cowboys have that working in their favor this Thanksgiving as they do every Thanksgiving.
All right, it'll be Washington in Dallas. Dallas on Thanksgiving Day. Catch that on Fox. Much more in this game coming up. But on the other side, who is the most dangerous quarterback in the NFL? Jared Goff might have the answer. Next on First Things First. Tune in tomorrow for our First Things First Thanksgiving episode. It'll be the one where we preview all the action on Turkey Day, starting with Washington traveling to Dallas for an NFC East showdown on Fox. You may be off. We can't stay away. Tune in tomorrow morning at 6:30 Eastern here on FS1.
Huge sports day, and I appreciate all the staff working on Thanksgiving to help us get on the air.
Yeah.
Huge sports day on Thanksgiving.
No, we look forward to it. It's going to be a lot to talk about. Fox Sports has teamed up with For the Win for the College Football Fan Index. Each week, you, the fans, will be ranking college football experiences. This week, we're ranking colleges that produce the best pros. So far, USC is leading the way, followed by, you got Alabama and Ohio State. Ohio State produced one sitting right across from us right here. What do you think, Nick, CC?
That's a strong list.
It's a strong list. I think that the SC part of this is more historic than current. I think,
yes.
I think in 2018, and I'm not trying to placate C, but the answer should be Ohio State. You look at what Ohio State's doing as far as producing superstars in the secondary, unlike almost any other time in school history. But that's a solid list. Iowa, maybe some linemen. Not a lot of stars.
Who's the last star that came out of Iowa?
It's a bunch of offensive linemen. A bunch of great offensive linemen, but nobody that touches the ball. No great. What up, C?
Jenna, that was a great question. We don't have an answer.
No, just for once, I wanted the roles to be reversed.
Yeah,
well,
the thing about it
felt good to be on this side of that one.
They pretty vanilla with it.
Love the honesty. We're going to get to Patty Mahomes in a second, but first, College Hoops, Wisconsin, Green Bay's Shaquan Hemphill drives down the lane for a nasty one-handed dunk.
I didn't see this game last time. I'm not going to lie to you, America. The first time I'm seeing this. Go get it, Shaquan.
That's one of my favorite courts. There and in Milwaukee. You see how they have the trees and everything printed into the court and everything? They got some. You guys know I watch all different aspects of the video.
Oh.
Duke and Auburn, watch this one. See Jared Harper up to Anfernee McIlmore for the alley-oop right over Zion.
Zion went to, he almost got it.
Yeah, he was a little late. Now, this was a more contested game than I thought.
Yes.
You know, late into the game, Auburn, Bruce Pearl does a great job there.
Later in the game, Zion gets revenge. Harper goes for the dunk. It does not end well
him. No. Zion got a dunk-like burst on this block. On the previous block, he didn't get off the ground like we're used to seeing him. This one, he did, glassed it.
It's really exciting to watch him play every game. I mean, he's going to do something offensively or defensively. You're like, did he just really do that? Is that guy 280 pounds? Yes, he is.
And he had it, like you mentioned, Duke didn't blow him out, and he had a quiet game, just 13 points. Those are probably directly correlated.
Back to Monday night's epic showdown. Yes, the Chiefs lost, but yes, the Chiefs won because of number 15. Second-year quarterback Patrick Mahomes is putting together an MVP-caliber season, leading the league in passing yards and touchdowns and smashing Chiefs records in the process, even gaining praise from his opponents with Jared Goff saying, Mahomes is the toughest guy in the NFL to defend right now, including Drew Brees. Nick, is Goff right about Mahomes?
Because of how he phrased it, he didn't say he's the best quarterback. He didn't even say he's playing the best. He said he's the toughest guy to defend. And in that regard, I think he's absolutely right. Nobody this year has taken more shots downfield and been more successful on those shots downfield than Patrick Mahomes. He's doing it while having a completion percentage right around 70%, which if it weren't in the era of Drew Brees, right around 80%, we'd be talking about how remarkable that is. When you also incorporate the fact that when you're defending Patrick Mahomes, you're not doing it in a vacuum. You're doing it where you've got superstars all around the field. I would say he's absolutely correct that the different things Mahomes can do in the pocket, out of the pocket, against the blitz, not against the blitz, deep, short, and intermediate makes him the toughest quarterback to defend, which again is a different discussion than who's the best or who's playing the best as far as the most different looks they can give you on film, the most different things you have to be prepared for. I think Jared Goff is absolutely right.
How much of that is because teams are still getting to know Patrick Mahomes, and how much of that is because this guy is something special?
It's a combination of both. Typically, when you see a star player and a future star, there's a lot of things have to come together. And Andy Reid and how he treated last season after they drafted him, they moved up in the draft to get him. a lot like some other teams did. He didn't jump the gun and put him in the first year. He had him sit behind Alex Smith. And the way Alex was able to handle him, that it took a lot of pressure off him. He was able to sit around, be around the NFL, and not take all those hits and really, really learn. And by the way, he is a really, really special talent. So Andy Reid's ability to be patient with him with this organization, the type of talent he was able to collect around him. So when Patty Mahomes got under center, he was with the NFL's leading rusher in Kareem Hunt. So forget about the team speed. Oh, potentially have the best tight end in Kelce. So how they do things and how they orchestrate things, the table has been set for him to be very, very successful in the beginning stages of his career. So that danger part is who's at the reins with him? Who's coaching him? What type of formations are they using? How are they attacking? And now, ultimately, how is he performing? And even under duress, we have seen him. If you do blitz him, he can run out of the pocket. So, and he is throwing the ball down the field. This is no dink and dunk offense. So I can understand what he would say as far as the most dangerous right now in the league. Drew Brees is playing great. He has less weapons. Mm-hmm. than Patty Mahomes has there in Kansas City. So it has nothing to do with playing well right now either. It's the danger and how much information you have to consume to try to stop them.
And you mentioned, you know, how much of it is that he's new, so to speak. And we've seen a lot of quarterbacks that have an awesome first month. Coach Mangini talks about this all the time. Mm-hmm. And then once you get 4 to 5 games of film on them, you see what they can't do. They make them do what they can't do. So Pat Mahomes in his first month, before Drew Brees really popped, when Pat Mahomes was the leading MVP guy, in his first 5 games of football, 302 yards a game, 14 touchdowns, 2 picks, a 113 rating. In the last 6 games since, 350 yards per game, 23 touchdowns to 8 interceptions, and a 122 rating. So the interception numbers have gone up in the second half of this season, but the touchdown numbers, the yards, the completion percentage, and the rating have all gone up as well. He's ratcheted his game up as defenses have gotten more accustomed to what he wants to do.
Can we just revisit something we haven't since the first week? Why is Patrick Mahomes so good? What is it about him that other teams are having such a hard time with? What does he do that other guys don't do?
Well, it's not only the scheme that Andy Reid's putting him in. He's got tremendous arm talent. He can throw the ball from a lot of different arm angles. Well, people say, well, what's the difference and what's the ability to be able to do that? Most people cannot throw the ball accurately from one arm angle, let alone different arm angles, meaning if you change your arm angle, you're going to be less consistent throwing it. Because he has thrown the baseball and because he's played some shortstop and pitcher, he has developed an uncanny ability, even better than Brett Favre. Brett Favre could throw it at some different arm angles, but Brett Favre going to throw that to everyone.
Yeah, Favre.
I mean, he's going to throw it to the other team also. So it's very, very rare that we're seeing guys able to duplicate the type of spin velocity on the football and be accurate with the football where he's changing. Sometimes I'm coming over the top, sometimes I'm dropping down, and his ability to take advantage of the defense, if you blitz him and you pressure him and throwing the ball deep down the field, that ability right there is pretty special. So one thing, there's no test for it, and I said all those other attributes, but man, he's a gamer. Like, you turn the lights on, and there's some guys, they just have it, and there are other guys, they just don't have it. And Patty Mahomes, to me, like a lot of other young quarterbacks who we said, Carson Wentz, we believe that he had Deshaun Watson. He's got it, and we believe Patty Mahomes has got it, and he's got a great supporting cast.
Explain to the audience why a guy would want to change arm angle. Like, what are the circumstances in which you just explained why it's impressive that he can do it, but explain to the audience why a guy would need to do that.
Patty Mahomes is comfortable, and sometimes when you're throwing the ball through these windows, the offensive lineman, and when you're not 6'5", there's windows between the lineman and between their hands that if you go conventional over the top, that ball will get batted down. And sometimes you have linemen, you're trying to throw around them. So there are a few guys that are able to do. Aaron Rodgers does it on occasion. Steve Young did it on occasions. There are guys that can do it. Aaron Rodgers, he has that ability because he also has the arm strength to be able to do it. So you have to have not only ability to be able to confident you can do it, but you got to be have a strong arm to be able to do it.
And real quick, just for one other thing, because it's odd to hear a quarterback say, this is what I'm seeing from this quarterback, because he's obviously not a defense player watching film. You were saying before the show that sometimes even as offensive players, you would watch other offenses to see things you guys could duplicate, you could steal. So there might actually be times that the Rams and Jared Goff have been watching the Chiefs offense to try to take some things from them?
Yeah, a lot of times we would watch film of Washington Redskins and Joe Gibbs and what they did with their bunch formations and their big receiver groupings. And then also when Peyton Manning, when he came into the league, especially with Tom Moore, you duplicate, you should see what kind of personnel do I have? And there's a lot of people, especially like the Rams, Jared Goff, they try to duplicate. Who's the most similar as far as personnel? That would be Kansas City. And Sean McVay, Andy Reid, all these coaches, they look at other people and what they do. Man, how can I duplicate that? Do I have guys who can do that? And you plug that into your system. So I believe, yes, Jared Goff has seen a lot of Kansas City, what we call cut-ups of the plays that they've run, because there's some overlap to both teams and what they're running offensively.
Didn't Goff and Mahomes' dad both play baseball?
Yeah, that's they mentioned that. Goff's dad was a pitcher, I think.
Yeah.
Mahomes was a pitcher.
Yeah, he had a short stint. He tried to be a major leaguer. I don't think he had a long career.
He's probably
ultimately being
a
firefighter.
There you go. All right, coming up, will LeBron's return to Cleveland tonight prove that the Cavs took him for granted? It's an interesting debate. Next on First Things First. An NFL football Thanksgiving feast will be served up on Fox as bitter NFC rivals battle when Adrian Peterson and company land in Dallas to take on Ezekiel Elliott and the Cowboys. That all starts at 4 o'clock Eastern on Fox.
Game of the year in the NFC East.
I'm going to eat some food tomorrow. I'm telling you that.
You've died in a long time. Time now for Say What? Les Miles was officially introduced as the new head coach for Kansas football Sunday, and I guess you could say he was at a loss for words at the opportunity. Say what?
The opportunity to get out and do community enhancement and be involved with the many things.
Listen.
Man, I'm glad he's back in our lives, man. He gonna eat some grass. He gonna win some games. Go for some bizarre fourth downs. Les Miles, good football coach, see?
Yeah, I'm just wondering how he gonna recruit in Kansas.
Mark Mangino won there. Got Aqib Talib, got Chris Harris. Went to an Orange Bowl. Beat Virginia Tech. Like, Kansas football is one of the worst Power 5 programs in the country. But they got a real coach now.
Well, let me tell you what they didn't win. They didn't win the press conference.
No, they did not.
What were you going to say, Jenna? Could you relate right there?
Yeah, I was going to
That's the way you are every day, speechless.
I know. I was going to say, let's do some stories to start your morning. Also, I can relate, absolutely, so I feel for him. Brought to you by the unexpected energy of ExxonMobil.
You should have brought up breadsticks, Jenna.
I already did it. That's once a year. MVP hopeful Todd Gurley had a quiet Monday night, finishing with just 55 yards on 12 carries, no scores. We learned he was dealing with an ankle injury. See, how important is Gurley with the display we saw Monday night to this team?
Oh, he's important. I mean, he's the table setter for a lot of things that they did. Now, you don't know those as a defense till after the game, but if you look at that play action, man, they thought he was healthy.
Right.
You know, so as long as he's in there in the NFL game, he can hurt you. And also, late in the fourth quarter, you can see they ran an outside zone, and he hit it like it was 95 going north. So I know he was gimpy earlier in the game, but Todd Gurley is still a special player, even a little gimpy. They can't function without him.
No, and your point is exactly correct, that they knew he was gimpy, but they still used him as a decoy as if he wasn't.
Yes.
And maybe late in that game when they needed the one first down and they ended up calling three pass plays, maybe a fully healthy Todd Gurley, they give him the ball on first down, see if he gets some 6 yards.
And they did that off of play action, though. So at least they utilized him that way.
All right, moving on. Bears quarterback Mitch Trubisky is also playing through some pain, with head coach Matt Nagy optimistic Trubisky will be good to go against the Lions Thursday with a shoulder injury. See, how worrisome is it for the Bears if Trubisky isn't healthy?
Well, for one, you're talking about a shoulder, and you're talking about a young quarterback who's been inconsistent. Now, they run a very, very exciting offense. I'm excited to see them on the national stage there versus the Lions, but inconsistency is a part of what he does, and now with the shoulder, I believe this is the type of thing as a young player, even if he's not great, just the overall toughness of playing, he can win his teammates over. So even if they know you're not 100%, but know you're out there with them, you earn a lot of points and stuff with your teammates. So I expect him to be continuing this playoff contention, but I expect him to win over some folks. I expect him to play in this game.
And they, in this past week's game, used him as a running threat more than they had all year.
Oh, he's a good athlete.
He has the second most rushing yards of any quarterback in football this season. So him, I understand this in a lower body injury, but him being less than 100% nursing something is something to watch. They do have who I believe is the best backup quarterback in football in Chase Daniel if they need him to start a game at some point in the year, but they need him if they're going to make a playoff run.
Well, I see you put best backup quarterback. Okay.
He's highest paid, best. I think I like Chase Daniel.
Okay.
Eagles wideout Golden Tate has just 7 catches and just 67 yards in his 2 games since joining the team, with Philly's offensive coordinator saying it has been challenging trying to fit him in. See, why is that?
Well, because you've come up, you feel the pressure of the organization because the general manager has made the move. And of course, they come to you and typically ask you, hey, we can get Golden Tate. Would you guys like to have him? Yes, but once you get him there and trying to feature him with some of the other players you have, I still need to get Nelson Aguilar the ball. I still need to get Alshon the ball. I still need to be able to run the ball. So, yes, it is a challenge. But, hey, Mike Groh, that's why you're the offensive coordinator. It's a normal challenge. Every coordinator around the league has challenge. That's a good one, though, because Golden Tate, you can throw the ball sideways and get it to him. You can run reverses, speed sweeps to him. It's not that difficult, Mike Groh.
It's also, though, not surprising that of all the players added during the season or at the deadline, the ones that have made the most instant impact have been defensive players. Demaryius Thomas had one big game, one really big first quarter with the Texans.
Yes.
You had Amari Cooper at the game where they tried to force him the ball and ended up working against him. Golden Tate hasn't really gotten off and running yet. A lot easier to fit in defensive players, particularly pass rushers, but even Eli Apple has been helpful for the Saints in the secondary.
Yes.
The offensive guys, a lot more work to get them fully involved in the offense.
All right, the Chiefs-Rams Monday night offensive explosion was the must-watch game of the season, unless you're a fan of defense, with Texans all-pro safety Tyrann Mathieu saying the game was tough to watch as a defender. See, what do you make of Honey Badger's comments?
No, I feel Honey Badger. Honey Badger's right. There's a lot of defenders, a lot like him, especially he's an elite defender, because they feel like in a game like that, they can make a difference to be able to slow an offense down. Now, he would love the chance to be able to, but also Honey Badger got Clowney, got J.J. Watt going to be chasing after, so those quarterbacks not going to have as much time. But, of course, as a defender, there's no way that you look at that Monday night game and you enjoy it, because you know every game you are operating at a deficit. You got the referees against you, got the rules against you, the way football has been changed now, that it's a huge advantage being an offensive player. The only thing that's saving you is late in the season in bad weather. That's when you're going to start to see these defenses come back and take advantage of these offenses. But in a good weather, an L.A. Coliseum, dome in New Orleans, man, if you have fair conditions, yeah, they're going to light you up based on the rules that you have now.
Late in the season, bad weather and playoff officiating also could tilt things back towards the defense a bit.
Like, yes, they allow you to be more physical.
Correct. I mean, that's cross sports, really. In the NBA, we talk about it. In the NFL, we talk about it. The refs do not want to have a game littered with flags the way Monday night was in the postseason. So they're going to let you get away with a little more jockeying, a little more hand fighting. I understand what Tyron's saying, but I actually think he would have had an awesome time playing in that football game because of the type of player he is. He's a safety who likes to blitz, get after the quarterback, and he's a ball-hawking safety. Like, I thought this game on Monday was awesome from a defensive perspective because there were so many enormous defensive plays. 7 turnovers in the game, 6 of them forced by a brilliant defensive play. You had 8 sacks in the game, another half dozen TFLs. Like, there were big plays. Now, I feel like all of the good defensive plays were either a sack, a TFL, or a pick, or a turnover, I should say. Mm-hmm. Everything else was the ball going up and down the field. But Tyrann Mathieu would have done well in this football game.
Yeah, this is going to be one of the adjustments. And the players will get adjustments when they start getting better information. This offseason, Sean McVay, Andy Reid, where did they spend a lot of their offseason? College football. That's the reason why they're running offense, because they had quarterbacks like that and they want to be able to put an offense that's friendly around them. So as you start to see the NFL, they will adjust. And I don't believe that Monday night was the norm. I still believe that the standard in the NFL is New England. And I still believe that the weather will have an effect in the playoffs. So, yes, we have seen numbers like we've never seen before, but I believe there's going to be a correction, and it's called weather. So I'd like to see how this is going to play out going forward.
All right, let's move on to the NBA now. LeBron James making his return to Cleveland again. This time he'll be wearing a different outfit. It'll be purple. It'll be gold. Lakers facing the Cavs tonight, and as expected, there is drama to be had. But this time it has nothing to do with LeBron. J.R. Smith recently saying the Cavs are tanking, and he's decided as a result to stay away from the team as they look to trade him. Nick, does the Cavs' disastrous 2-13 season so far this year prove that they maybe took LeBron James for granted?
I think it further confirms what we've known about this organization in every year of its modern history that hasn't involved LeBron James, which is that it's not very well run. They don't win games. They don't make the playoffs. And they don't do a good job organizationally of having any consistency, from retaining general managers to having consistency at the head coach to even committing to a plan and sticking to it. This offseason, they told their veterans, they told Kevin Love, we're trying to win right now. Mm-hmm. They told anyone that would listen, we think we can compete to make the playoffs this mm-hmm. year, knowing that if they were to do that, they would lose their draft pick. They said, we don't care. We are trying to win right now. We think Colin Sexton can be an instant starter in this league. And what are they? They're the worst team in basketball. Pardon me. Go ahead, see. I got to.
The reason why Cleveland, why it's just hard for us to try to understand what they've done, because they've just been so bad without LeBron. Like, we've seen no organization in no sport with a star be so successful and be at the top of the sport and that athlete go away and come back. And they still, the same result. It's amazing how similar the Cavs were before LeBron, which was also before Daniel Gilbert. Mm-hmm. And when they lost LeBron to Miami, all the things that Gilbert said, LeBron puts that, forgets about it some type of way. LeBron's better than I would have. You know, I wouldn't have never been able to forget that. He comes back, and ultimately, I'm going to tell you, I don't know how they won a championship. I don't know how LeBron beat Golden State. Like, because if you look at all the chaos and all the truth that's been brought out since LeBron has left, like what really, really, really happened, because all the time before we were blaming LeBron. Oh, LeBron made bad decisions here. Oh, LeBron's picking the players. And that was everything. That was further away from the truth. But now we know. We know LeBron. We know he didn't want Kyrie to leave. We know that he was upset about the general manager leaving. And I hate to say it, but, man, Daniel Gilbert, he has not – no one deserves to have a loser, but, man, he has not done well as far as owning a sports business.
Listen, I know you think that I'm sometimes a little too hard on Dan Gilbert, but the facts are undeniable that he lucked into LeBron James twice. He did nothing to – nothing. He wasn't even the owner when they got the number one pick. Mm-hmm. And then he was fortunate enough that LeBron had such a tie to Northeast Ohio, had such a commitment to that area, and had accomplished enough in Miami that he was a made man already, that he could take the chance to go back to a team like that. And he squandered it twice.
Twice.
And he – and it'd be one thing if it was just a fait accompli. LeBron, if he won a title in Cleveland, was definitely going to leave and try to go on to another chapter. That was not LeBron's plan. When LeBron went back to Cleveland, he thought, A, it would take a lot longer than 2 years to win a title, and B, mm-hmm. that he would retire there. But the moment Dan Gilbert got an opening to where LeBron couldn't exert his pressure, the 1 year LeBron was not a free agent in the summer, he went against everything he had committed to. And so he, in my eyes, forced LeBron's hand, and with some of the great reporting from the reporters on the ground in Cleveland, wanted his franchise back, wanted to take control back. But this is what I know about the Cavs. The year before LeBron got there, they won 17 games. The year after he left the first time, they won 19 games. This year, they're going to win somewhere 17 to 19 games. When LeBron was there the first time, he never had a teammate average 18 points a game. 18. Mm-hmm. His best teammate in his first 7 years of his career was Mo Williams. After that, it was Big Z and Larry Hughes. It has been systematic mismanagement. The only reason they were competitive the second time he came back was because they were so bad after he left. They got three number one picks. One was Kyrie. One they could trade for Kevin Love.
Quickly, how do you think the fans are going to respond to LeBron being back?
He's the king. He is always going to be the king.
They'll always welcome him back.
He made them champions. All right? So that's one thing they'll always have with them. LeBron did that. And he fulfilled his part of the promise.
And I was at LeBron's last game in that building. Right, to get last, he didn't get a hero send off because it was a blowout. It was the end. They didn't want to really acknowledge that he was potentially leaving. So I think it will be 180 degrees from the first time he came back 8 years ago, which was as intensely negative reaction as anyone has ever gotten. Can I say one thing real quick about the news you mentioned about J.R. Smith?
Yeah.
Listen, J.R. is going to be in the headlines this week for negative stuff. I just want to remind people, my pal J.R., 15 years in the league, 11th all-time in three-pointers, and that championship they won, if he doesn't hit those two huge shots in Game 7 to open the second half, they don't win that game. So JR now is in a different part of his career, but it has been a very solid NBA career with a championship and a Sixth Man of the Year award, and I hope he catches on somewhere because it's not working out for him this year in Cleveland.
JR very much appreciates that. Hey, coming up, any chance the Eagles can bounce back from their embarrassing loss to the Saints? What are you laughing at,
Z? Laughing at me.
Next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, we are joined by the very unpredictable former NFL head coach Eric Mangini. I say that because I said, hey, coach, how was your night last night? Thinking you watched one of 27 games that may have been happening anywhere in the country. You, instead, were at the Cher concert.
Oh, well, no, at the Broadway.
Whatever, semantics.
A friend of our family is the young Cher, and she's amazing.
Words, words, words. How was Cher?
Cher, the show was fantastic.
Good.
Cher showed up.
There you go.
Cher is not in the show.
I just found that
it's
out.
It's a musical about her.
Okay, well, we're going to take you through
it. Let me guess. Is Bruce Springsteen not in his show either?
No. Okay, you get the one outlier.
See? There you go.
He is the show.
That's why I thought that. For those who don't believe in a Super Bowl hangover,
we'll
take a look at last week's Eagles performance.
I'm not sharing anymore.
Don't share anything. Mm-hmm. Philly got steamrolled by the Saints 48-7, the worst loss by a defending Super Bowl champion ever. That, my friends, is a football hangover. Eagles now sit at 4-6. They are slowly watching their playoff hopes slip away. Here's Philly's safety, Malcolm Jenkins, on his team's lackluster performance.
It was just embarrassing, you know, quite frankly. It was one of those things that I didn't feel like as a team we had a lot of fight. I'd rather get thrown out of a game than just lay down and take it. And, you know, it was a ton of frustrations. One being, you know, obviously me going back to New Orleans, that's a game that meant a lot to me. But just the demeanor of the team really bothered me. And then just the frustration of having guys that you work hard with and spend a lot of time with get injured. It's just a rough day overall, but you know, at this point in time, we need to figure out some things about ourselves.
What do you mean?
When a team jumps on you like the Saints did and things gets rolling, you find out a lot about yourself. You know, whether you're going to get blown out regardless. You're either going to get blown out swing or you're going to get blown out laying down. And I think you had a little bit of both. I think as leaders of the team, we need to nip in the butt because we're, you know, at that moment where we can't carry non-essential personnel. Not to say that there are guys that aren't playing hard or there are guys that aren't giving it what they got. We just need every drop of it at this point, and we're going to demand that from the top of the roster all the way to the bottom.
Coach, Malcolm Jenkins doesn't think they should carry non-essential personnel, which means he thinks they might have some. What was your reaction to what Jenkins said?
Well, I had different reactions throughout it, and I thought, here's a guy who's going back to a team that he played for, had a lot of success with, and the game might have been a little bit more meaningful and personal to him, so it was hard for him to see other guys maybe not respond the way that he did going into the game. But I do think when you talk about responding to adversity and you talk about dealing with a situation like they were in, which became embarrassing, it goes to controlling your emotions. And here, Malcolm Jenkins, the guy who gets beat on 4th and 7 for a touchdown, what does he do? He throws up the bird. So that to me is not the best example of controlling your emotions, of providing leadership, of responding the right way. So it's very important when you're in a situation like this to take a step back and say, all right, what can I do differently? I know that he's commenting on other non-essential personnel, other people in the locker room, and maybe there's a lot of truth to that, but what is he doing specific to himself and specific to the situation to help push it forward?
Well, let me ask you this, kind of counterpoint to that. The things he needs to do specific to himself, he doesn't have to tell the world about. I think as a team leader, is it on the board? Because Jenkins isn't a guy that he's not Jalen Ramsey. He's not a guy that talks a lot of trash about other players. But he is a guy as the lone remaining starter in that secondary, as one of the only guys on the team that had won a championship before the Philadelphia Eagles won one last year, and is one of the oldest players on the team, to maybe put that message out there intentionally as a message to the other guys, knowing, I think those guys see how hard he works, knows that he is handling his business individually, and obviously he needs to play better, everybody does, but is there not something to be said about him trying to set the tone? Not that different than the comments you really liked from Cam Hayward six weeks ago, when he talked about either basically get with it or get lost, like get on the page or get off the field. Is there no similarity to you there?
But what else did Cam Hayward say? He said, I don't care if I get another sack the rest of the season. I don't care what my personal statistics are. This needs to happen. And he didn't. That's what I really liked about it, is he was saying, I will do whatever it takes for this to move forward. And I remember with Rodney Harrison, when we had Asante Samuel and Eugene Wilson, two rookies starting in the secondary, and it didn't always go very smoothly, and there were games where he was incredibly frustrated, but he took it upon himself to make sure that he was improving the situation and then not adding fuel to the fire in the locker room, saying, hey, there's some mystery people in this group that I'm pointing to, but not really pointing to. You guys figure it out. It just creates a big, giant distraction.
And ultimately, this league is about winning and losing, Coach. And you know when you win, it covers up a lot of warts and a lot of stinky smell. But when you start to lose, and I said this about Philadelphia, when they start making all those comments of, oh, how much more fun they have, and people are like, oh, yeah, you know, if I want to play, I want to have some fun. I don't want to play in New England. I want to play in Philly. Yeah, right. Let me tell you where you want to play, where you win. Because no place where you're playing when you're losing are people happy. And are people being called out? Malcolm Jenkins, I've been knowing him a long time. He's been a leader at every level he's been at. High school in the Jersey area, great high school athlete, recruited Ohio State, captain there, high achiever there, drafted in the first round by the Saints, high achiever there. Sean Payton called him one of the big mistakes that they have made from a personnel standpoint, allowing him to leave in free agency. Now a world champion again with the Philadelphia Eagles. So what you saw in that game was a breaking point. Sean Payton went after him. Now, there's a reason why he left there. It might have been money, and Sean might be saying that. But Malcolm Jenkins took it personal, and you're right. He went into the game. It was a little more personal than him. And also, in a blowout, it's fourth down. They didn't have to. They went after him. And that happens in the NFL all the time. So, to me, the reason why he responded in a way that wasn't his normal character, that was his breaking point. And everyone in this league's got a breaking point, and that's what you're starting to see with this team. So, man, it's hard to lead when you're losing. It's hard to lead when you have certain expectations of yourself. You try to pass that on to other people, and the people aren't as responsible. That's what younger players are. So I can understand what he's saying. I'm not making an excuse for it.
Right.
It's not a behavior that I accept, but that's the way this league is. That was the world champ out there, and Sean Payton, man, gutted him. Throw him up on the bank, didn't care nothing about him. So Malcolm Jenkins, his overall reaction is the overall frustration that goes around this league when you lose, Jim.
So play it forward. What does that mean for the team? How can Doug Peterson or anyone take that and turn it into some sort of positive for where this team is going right now?
Look, there's some truth to what he was saying, too. I didn't think they responded very well to adversity. I didn't think that the energy level and the body language was great when things went south. So that does need to be addressed. There has been a lot of transition on this team. Guys that were there last year playing leadership roles aren't there. And sometimes we group it as the defending champions, and you think everything's going to be the same. But when you lose that experience and now guys are responding to new situations, that's part of the learning curve, too. And that's got to be coached. You got to coach through, how do we want to respond the next time this happens? What did we do poorly, and what can we change and learn from this loss?
And you mentioned adding fuel to the fire, that potentially one of the negative sides of the comments. I look at the Eagles like this. That fire is raging out of control. Like, they are in a position right now where they are coming off the worst loss for a defending champ in NFL history. Yet, despite all of that, they're two games back in a division where the team ahead of them in first place is starting Colt McCoy at quarterback. Their next three games are all divisional games. They go the Giants, they go Washington, then they go Dallas. They still somehow, 8 wins might win the NFC East. Like, this still can be salvaged at least partially. And I think it's a last resort for Malcolm Jenkins. I think his to use the I think he's like, listen, maybe I am adding fuel, and maybe this is finally slowing it down. Because I don't think he's a selfish player. And I know that's not what you were saying. I think he was trying to do what he thought was most important as a leader and as one of the guys on the team who can speak out.
But Chris can tell you this. In the locker room, the players know who's working, who's not working. The players know who's doing the right things off the field when they're at home. Mm-hmm. They know. So if you're a leader, one of the things that you expect as a head coach or as an organization is that you go and spend time with that person. Say, look, this behavior's not acceptable. You're affecting all of us. I would hope that that's what he's doing, as opposed to publicly saying,
yes,
hey, we've got some guys that are doing this.
Yes.
Now it becomes a witch hunt. Who's doing it? Who, you know, why is
it
being
done? And people respect his voice.
They do, and I'm sure guys would respond. The things that he's done in the league, everybody has respect for. So if you're a young player, a guy who's not holding up your end of the bargain, then you should respond to Malcolm as well.
That's what Cher said. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.